Chapter 11. Like summer tempests came her tears.
Rat put out a neat little brown paw, gripped Lady Toad firmly by the scruff of the neck, and gave a great hoist and a pull, and the waterlogged Toad came up slowly but surely over the edge of the hole, till at last she stood safe and sound in the hall, streaked with mud and weed to be sure, and with the water streaming off her, but happy and high-spirited as of old, now that she found herself once more in the house of a friend, and dodgings and evasions were over, and she could lay aside a disguise that was unworthy of her position and wanted such a lot of mending.
"Oh, Ratty,"
she cried.
"I've been through such times since I saw you last, you can't think. Such trials, such sufferings, and all so nobly borne. Then such escapes, such disguises, such subterfuges, and all so cleverly planned and carried out. Been in prison, got out of it, of course. Been thrown into a canal, swam ashore. Stole a horse, sold her for a large sum of money. Humbugged everybody, made him do exactly what I wanted. Oh, I am a smart toad, and no mistake. What do you think my last exploit was? Just hold on till I tell you."
"Toad," said the Water Rat, gravely and firmly,
"you go off upstairs at once and take off that great ugly coat that looks as if it might formerly have belonged to some coachman, and clean yourself thoroughly and put on some of my clothes. Well, mine won't do. Put on one of Mole's dresses and try to come down looking like a lady if you can. For a more shabby, bedraggled, disreputable-looking object than you are, I never set eyes on in my whole life. Now stop swaggering and arguing and be off. I'll have something to say to you later."
Toad was at first inclined to stop and do some talking back to her. She had had enough of being ordered about when she was in prison, and here was the thing being begun all over again, apparently, and by a rat, too. However, she caught sight of herself in the looking glass over the hat stand, and she changed her mind and went very quickly and humbly upstairs to Rat's dressing room. There she had a thorough wash and brush up, changed her clothes, and stood for a long time before the glass, contemplating herself with pride and pleasure, and thinking what utter idiots all the people must have been to have ever mistaken her for one moment for a man. By the time she came down again, luncheon was on the table, and very glad Toad was to see it, for she had been through some trying experiences and had taken much hard exercise since the excellent breakfast provided for her by the gypsy. While they ate, Toad told Rat all her adventures, dwelling chiefly on her own cleverness and presence of mind in emergencies and cunning in tight places, and rather making out that she had been having a gay and highly coloured experience. But the more she talked and boasted, the more grave and silent Rat became. When at last Toad had talked herself to a standstill, there was silence for a while, and then Rat said,
"Now, Toadie dear, I don't want to give you pain after all you've been through already, but seriously, don't you see what an awful fool you've been making of yourself? On your own admission, you have been handcuffed, imprisoned, starved, chased, terrified out of your life, insulted, jeered at, and ignominiously flung into the water by an evil barge woman. Where's the amusement in that? Where does the fun come in? And all because you must needs go steal a motor car. You know that you've never had anything but trouble from motor cars from the moment you first set eyes on one. But if you will be mixed up with them, as you generally are 5 minutes after you've started, why steal them? Risk life and limb if you think it's exciting. Be bankrupt for a change if you've set your mind on it. But why choose to be a convict? When are you going to be sensible, old girl, and think of your sisters here and try and be a credit to us? Do you suppose it's any pleasure to me, for instance, to hear animals saying as I go about that I'm the lady on the riverbank that keeps company with jailbirds?"
Now, It was a very comforting point in Toad's character that she was a thoroughly good-hearted animal and never minded being jawed by those who were her real friends. And even when most set upon a thing, she was always able to see the other side of the question. So, although, while Rat was talking so seriously, she kept saying to herself mutinously,
"But it was fun, though. It was awful fun."
And making strange, suppressed noises inside her. And
poop, poop, poop. Poop, poop, poop.
And other sounds resembling stifled snorts or the opening of soda water bottles. Yet, when Rat had quite finished, she heaved a deep sigh and said, very nicely and humbly,
"Quite right, Ratty darling. How sound you always are. Yes, I have been a conceited old haybag, I can quite see that. But now I'm going to be a good toad and not do it any more. As for motor cars, I've not been at all so keen about them since my last ducking in that river of yours. The fact is, while I was hanging on to the edge of your hole and getting my breath, I had a sudden idea, a really brilliant idea, connected with motor boats. There. Now, don't take on so, old girl, and stamp and upset things. It was only an idea. And we won't talk any more about it now. We'll have our coffee and a smoke and a quiet chat, and then I'm going to stroll quietly down to Toad Hall and get into clothes of my own and set things going again on the old lines. I've had enough of adventures. I shall lead a quiet, steady, respectable life, pottering about my property and improving it, doing a little landscape gardening at times. There will always be a bit of dinner for my friends, my dear sisters, when they come to see me, and I shall keep a pony chaise to jog about the country, and just as I used to in the good old days before I got restless and wanted to do things."
"Stroll quietly down to Toad Hall,"
cried Rat, greatly excited.
"What are you talking about? Do you mean to say you haven't heard?"
"Heard what?"
said Toad, turning rather pale.
"Go on, Ratty, quick. Don't spare me. What haven't I heard?"
"Do you mean to tell me,"
shouted Rat, thumping with her little fist upon the table,
"that you've heard nothing about the stoats and weasels?"
"What? The wild wooders?"
cried Toad, trembling in every limb.
"No, not a word. What have they been doing?"
"And how they've been and taken Toad Hall,"
continued Rat. Toad leaned her elbows on the table and her chin on her paws, and a large tear welled up in each of her eyes, overflowed and splashed on the table, plop, plop.
"Oh, go on, Ratty,"
she murmured presently.
"Tell me all. The worst is over. I am an animal again. I can bear it."
"When you got into that trouble of yours,"
said Rat, slowly and impressively.
"I mean, when you disappeared from society for a time over that misunderstanding about a machine, you know?"
Toad merely nodded.
"Well, it was a good deal talked about down here, naturally,"
continued Rat.
"Not only along the riverside, but even in the wild wood. Animals took sides, as always happens. The riverbankers stuck up for you and said you had been infamously treated, and there was no justice to be had in the land nowadays. But the wildwood animals said hard things and served you right, and it was time this sort of thing was stopped. And they got very cocky and went about saying you were done for this time. You would never come back again. Never, never."
Toad nodded once more, keeping silence.
"That's the sort of little beasts they are,"
Rat went on.
"But Mole and Badger, they stuck out through thick and thin that you would come back again soon somehow. They didn't know exactly how, but somehow."
Toad began to sit up in her chair again and to smirk a little.
"They argued from history,"
continued Rat.
"They said that no criminal laws had ever been known to prevail against cheek and plausibility such as yours, combined with the power of a long purse. So they arrange to move their things into Toad Hall and sleep there and keep it aired and have it all ready for you when you turned up. They didn't guess what was going to happen, of course. Still, they had their suspicions of the wild wood animals. And now I come to the most painful and tragic part of my story. One dark night, it was a very dark night, and blowing hard too, and raining simply cats and dogs, a band of weasels, armed to the teeth, crept silently up the carriage drive to the front entrance. Simultaneously, a body of desperate ferrets, advancing through the kitchen garden, possessed themselves of the backyard and offices, while a company of skirmishing stoats who stuck at nothing occupied the conservatory and the billiard room and held the French windows open onto the lawn. Mole and Badger were sitting by the fire in the smoking room, telling stories and suspecting nothing, for it wasn't a night for any animals to be out in, when those bloodthirsty villains broke down the doors and rushed in upon them from every side. They made the best fight they could, but what was the good? They were unarmed and taken by surprise, and what can two animals do against hundreds? They took and beat them severely with sticks, those two poor faithful creatures, and turned them out into the cold and the wet, with many insulting and uncalled-for remarks.
Here, the unfeeling Toad broke into a snigger and then pulled herself together and tried to look particularly solemn.
And the wild wooders have been living in Toad Hall ever since,
continued Rat.
And going on simply anyhow, lying in bed half the day and breakfast at all hours, and the place in such a mess, I'm told, it's not fit to be seen. Eating your grub, drinking your drink, and making bad jokes about you, and singing vulgar songs about, well, about prisons and magistrates and policemen, horrid personal songs with no humour in them. And they're telling the tradespeople and everybody that they've come to stay for good.
Oh, have they?
Said Toad, getting up and seizing a stick.
I'll jolly soon see about that.
It's no good, Toad,
called Rat after her.
You better come back and sit down. You'll only get into trouble.
But Toad was off, and there was no holding her. She marched rapidly down the road, her stick over her shoulder, fuming and muttering to herself in her anger till she got near her front gate, when suddenly there popped up from behind the palings a long, yellow ferret with a gun.
Who comes there?
Said the ferret sharply.
Stuff and nonsense,
said Lady Toad very angrily.
What do you mean by talking like that to me? Come out of that at once or I'll...
The ferret said never a word, but he brought his gun up to his shoulder. Toad prudently dropped flat in the road and bang! A bullet whistled over her head. The startled Lady Toad scrambled to her feet and scampered off down the road as hard as she could. And as she ran, she heard the ferret laughing and other horrid thin little laughs taking it up and carrying on the sound. She went back, very crestfallen, and told the water rat.
What did I tell you?
Said Rat.
It's no good, my dear. They've got sentries posted and they are all armed. You must just wait.
Still, Toad was not inclined to give in all at once. So she got out the boat and set off, rowing up the river, to where the garden front of Toad Hall came down to the waterside. Arriving within sight of her old home, she rested on her oars and surveyed the land cautiously. All seemed very peaceful and deserted and quiet. She could see the whole front of Toad Hall, glowing in the evening sunshine, the pigeons settling by twos and threes along the straight line of the roof, the garden, a blaze of flowers, the creek that led up to the boathouse, the little wooden bridge that crossed it, all tranquil, uninhabited, apparently waiting for her return. She would try the boathouse first, she thought. Very warily, she paddled up to the mouth of the creek and was just passing under the bridge when... Crash! A great stone, dropped from above, smashed through the bottom of the boat. It filled and sank, and Toad found herself struggling in deep water. Looking up, she saw two stoats leaning over the parapet of the bridge and watching her with great glee.
"It'll be your head next time, Lady Toady,"
they called out to her. The indignant Toad swam to shore, while the stoats laughed and laughed, supporting each other and laughed again, till they nearly had two fits, that is, one fit each, of course. Toad retraced her weary way on foot and related her disappointing experiences to the water rat once more.
"Well, what did I tell you?"
said Rat very crossly.
"And now, look here. See what you've been and done. Lost me my boat that I was so fond of, that's what you've done. And simply ruined that good dress of Mole's. Really, Toad, of all the trying animals, I wonder how you managed to keep any friends at all."
Toad saw at once how wrongly and foolishly she had acted. She admitted her errors and wrong-headedness and made a full apology to Rat for losing her boat and spoiling Mole's clothes. And she wound up by saying, with that frank self-surrender which always disarmed her friend's criticism and won them back to her side,
"Oh, Ratty, I see I've been a headstrong and willful Toad. Henceforth, believe me, I will be humble and submissive and will take no action without your kind advice and full approval."
"If that is really so,"
said the good-natured Rat, already appeased,
"then my advice to you is, considering the lateness of the hour, to sit down and have your supper, which will be on the table in a minute, and be very patient, for I am convinced that we do nothing until we have seen Mole and Badger and heard their latest news and held conference and taken their advice in this difficult matter."
"Oh, ah, yes, of course, here's Mole and Badger,"
said Toad lightly.
"What's become of them? The dear girls, I had forgotten all about them."
"Well, may you ask,"
said Rat reproachfully,
"while you were riding about the country in expensive motor cars and galloping proudly on blood horses and breakfasting on the fat of the land, these two poor, devoted animals have been camping out in the open in every sort of weather, living very rough by day and lying very hard by night, watching over your house, patrolling your boundaries, keeping a constant eye on the stoats and the weasels, scheming and planning and contriving how to get your property back for you. You don't deserve to have such true and loyal friends, Toad. You don't, really. Some day, when it's too late, you'll be sorry you didn't value them more when you had them."
"Oh, I'm an ungrateful beast, I know,"
sobbed Toad, shedding bitter tears.
"Let me go out and find them. Oh, come on, out into the cold, dark night and share their hardships and try and prove..." "Oh, no, hold on a bit. Surely I heard the chink of dishes on a tray. Supper's here at last. Hooray! Come on, Ratty!"
Rat remembered that poor Lady Toad had been on prison fare for a considerable time and that large allowances had therefore to be made. She followed her to the table accordingly, and hospitably encouraged her in her gallant efforts to make up for past privations. They had just finished their meal and resumed their armchairs when there came a heavy knock at the door. Toad was nervous, but Rat, nodding mysteriously at her, went straight up to the door and opened it, and in walked Mistress Badger. She had all the appearance of one who for some nights had been kept away from home and all its little comforts and conveniences. Her shoes were covered with mud, and she was looking very rough and tousled. But then she had never been a very smart woman, Badger, at the best of times. She came solemnly up to Toad, shook her by the paw, and said,
"Welcome home, Lady Toad." "Alas, what am I saying? Home, indeed. This is a poor homecoming. Unhappy Toad."
Then she turned her back on her, sat down to the table, drew her chair up, and helped herself to a large slice of cold pie. Toad was quite alarmed at this very serious and portentous style of greeting. But Rat whispered to her,
"Never mind. Don't take any notice and don't say anything to her just yet. She's always rather low and despondent when she's wanting her victuals. In half an hour's time, she'll be quite a different animal."
So they waited in silence, and presently there came another and a lighter knock. Rat, with a nod to Toad, went to the door and ushered in Mole. Very shabby and unwashed, with bits of hay and straw sticking in her fur.
"Hooray! Here's Lady Toad!"
cried Mole, her face beaming.
"I fancy having you back again. We never dreamt you would turn up so soon. Why, you must have managed to escape, you clever, ingenious, intelligent Toad."
Rat, alarmed, pulled her by the elbow. But it was too late. Toad was puffing and swelling already.
"Clever? Oh, no,"
she said.
"Oh, I'm not really clever, according to my friends. I've only broken out of the strongest prison in England, that's all, and captured a railway train and escaped on it, that's all, and disguised myself and gone about the country humbugging everybody, that's all."
"Disguised yourself?"
repeated the astonished Mole.
"Not once, not twice, but three times,"
continued Toad.
"Oh, no, I'm a stupid fool, I am. I'll tell you one or two of my little adventures, Mole, darling, and you shall judge for yourself."
"Well, well,"
said Mole, moving towards the supper table.
"Supposing you talk while I eat, not a bite since breakfast. Oh, my, oh, my."
And she sat down and helped herself liberally to cold beef and pickles. Toad straddled on the hearth rug, thrust her paw into one of the practical skirt pockets of her borrowed togs and pulled out a handful of silver.
"Look at that,"
she cried, displaying it.
"That's not bad, is it? For a few minutes' work. And how do you think I'd done it, Mole? Horse stealing, that's how I done it."
"Go on, Toad,"
said Mole, immensely interested.
"Toad, do be quiet, please,"
said Rat.
"And don't you egg her on, Mole, when you know what she is. But please, tell us as soon as possible what the position is and what's best to be done, now that Toad is back at last."
"The position's about as bad as it can be,"
replied Mole despondently.
"And as for what's to be done, why, blessed if I know. Mistress Badger and I have been round and round the place by night and by day, always the same thing. Sentries posted everywhere, guns poked out at us, stones thrown at us. Always an animal on the lookout, and when they see us, my, how they do laugh. That's what annoys me most."
"It's a very difficult situation,"
said Rat, reflecting deeply.
"But I think I see now, in the depths of my mind, what Toad really ought to do. I will tell you. She ought to..."
"No, she oughtn't,"
shouted Mole, with her mouth full.
"Nothing of the sort. You don't understand. What she ought to do is, she ought to..."
"Well, I shan't do it anyway,"
cried Toad, getting excited.
"I'm not going to be ordered about by you ladies. It's my house we're talking about, and I know exactly what to do, and I'll tell you. I'm going to..."
By this time, they were all three talking at once, at the top of their voices, and the noise was simply shrill and deafening, when a grave, dry voice made itself heard, saying,
"Be quiet at once, all of you."
And instantly, everyone was silent. It was Badger, who, having finished her pie, had turned round in her chair and was looking at them severely. When she saw that she had secured their attention and that they were evidently waiting for her to address them, she turned back to the table again and reached out for the cheese. And so great was the respect commanded by the solid qualities of that admirable animal that not another word was uttered until she had quite finished her repast and brushed the crumbs from her knees. Lady Toad fidgeted a good deal, but Rat held her firmly down. When Badger had quite done, she got up from her seat and stood before the fireplace, reflecting deeply. At last she spoke.
"Lady Toad,"
she said severely,
You bad, troublesome little animal. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? What do you think your mother, my old friend, would have said if she'd been here tonight and had known of all your goings-on?
Toad, who was on the sofa by this time, with her legs up, rolled over on her face, shaken by sobs of contrition.
There.
Went on Badger, more kindly.
Never mind, dear. Stop crying. We're going to let bygones be bygones and try and turn over a new leaf. But what Mole says is quite true. The stoats are on guard at every point, and they make the best sentinels in the world. It's quite useless to think of attacking the place. They're too strong for us.
Then it's all over,
sobbed Toad, crying into the sofa cushions.
I shall go and enter a convent and never see my dear Toad Hall any more.
Come, cheer up, Toadie,
said Badger.
There are more ways of getting back a place than taking it by storm. I haven't said my last word yet. Now, I'm going to tell you a great secret.
Toad sat up slowly and dried her eyes. Secrets had an immense attraction for her because she could never keep one, and she enjoyed the sort of unhallowed thrill she experienced when she went and told another animal after having faithfully promised not to.
There is an underground passage,
said Badger impressively,
that leads from the riverbank, quite near here, right up into the middle of Toad Hall.
Oh, nonsense, Badger, darling,
said Toad airily.
You've been listening to some of the yarns they spin in the public houses about here. I know every inch of Toad Hall, inside and out. Nothing of the sort, I do assure you.
My dear girl,
said Badger with great severity,
your mother, who was a worthy animal, a lot worthier than some others I know, was a particular friend of mine and told me a great deal she wouldn't have dreamt of telling you. She discovered that passage. She didn't make it, of course. That was done hundreds of years before your parents ever came to live there. And she and your father repaired it and cleaned it out because they thought it might come in useful some day in case of trouble or danger. And she showed it to me. Don't let my daughter know about it, she said. She's a good girl, but very light and volatile in character and simply cannot hold her tongue. If she's ever in a real fix, and it would be of use to her, you may tell her about the secret passage, but not before.
The other animals looked hard at Toad to see how she would take it. Toad was inclined to be sulky at first, but she brightened up immediately, like the good egg she was.
Well,
she said.
Perhaps I am a bit of a talker, a popular socialite such as I am. My friends get round me, we chaff, we sparkle, we tell witty stories, and somehow my tongue gets wagging. I have the gift of conversation. I've been told I ought to have had a salon, whatever that may be. Anyway, never mind. Go on. Badger, how's this passage of yours going to help us?
I've found out a thing or two lately,
continued Badger.
I got Otter to disguise herself as a sweep and call at the back door, with brushes over her shoulder, asking for a job. There's going to be a big banquet tomorrow night. It's somebody's birthday, the chief weasels, I believe, and all the weasels will be gathered together in the dining hall, eating and drinking and laughing and carrying on, suspecting nothing. No guns, no swords, no sticks, no arms of any sort whatever.
But the sentinels will be posted as usual,
remarked Rat.
Exactly,
said Badger.
That is my point. The weasels will trust entirely to their excellent sentinels, and that is where the passage comes in. That very useful tunnel leads right up under the butler's pantry, next to the dining hall.
Aha, that squeaky board in the butler's pantry, said Toad. Now I understand it.
We shall creep out quietly into the butler's pantry, cried Mole.
With our pistols and swords and sticks, shouted Rat.
And rush in upon them, said Badger.
And whack 'em and whack 'em and whack 'em,
cried Toad in ecstasy, running round and round the room and jumping over the chairs.
Very well then, said Badger,
resuming her usual dry manner.
Our plan is settled, and there's nothing more for you to argue and squabble about. So, as it's getting very late, all of you go right off to bed at once. We will make all the necessary arrangements in the course of the morning tomorrow.
Toad, of course, went off to bed dutifully with the rest. She knew better than to refuse, though she was feeling much too excited to sleep. But she had had a long day, with many events crowded into it, and sheets and blankets were very friendly and comforting things after plain straw, and not too much of it spread on the stone floor of a draughty cell. And her head had not been many seconds on her pillow before she was snoring happily. Naturally, she dreamt a good deal about roads that ran away from her just when she wanted them, and canals that chased her and caught her, and a barge that sailed into the banqueting hall just as she was giving a dinner party. And she was alone in the secret passage, pushing onwards, but it twisted and turned round and shook itself and sat up on its end. Yet somehow, at the last, she found herself back in Toad Hall, safe and triumphant, with all her friends gathered round about her, earnestly assuring her that she really was a clever Lady Toad. She slept till a late hour next morning, and by the time she got down, she found that the other animals had finished their breakfast some time before. Mole had slipped off somewhere by herself without telling anyone where she was going to. Badger sat in the armchair reading the paper, and not concerning herself in the slightest about what was going to happen that very evening. Rat, on the other hand, was running round the room busily, with arms full of weapons of every kind, distributing them in four little heaps on the floor, and saying excitedly under her breath as she ran,
Here's a sword for Rat, here's a sword for Mole, here's a sword for Toad, here's a sword for Badger, here's a pistol for Rat, here's a pistol for Mole, here's a pistol for Toad, here's a pistol for Badger.
And so on, in a regular, rhythmical way, while the four little heaps gradually grew and grew.
That's all very well, old girl,
said Badger, presently, looking at the busy little animal over the edge of her newspaper.
I'm not blaming you, but just let us once get past the stoats with those detestable guns of theirs, and I assure you, we shan't want any swords or pistols. We four women with our sticks, once we're inside the dining hall, why, we shall clear the floor of all the lot of them in 5 minutes. I'd have done the whole thing by myself. Only I didn't want to deprive you ladies of the fun.
It's as well to be on the safe side,
said Rat reflectively, polishing a pistol barrel on her sleeve and looking along it. Toad, having finished her breakfast, picked up a stout stick and swung it vigorously, belabouring imaginary animals.
I'll learn 'em to steal my house! I'll learn 'em! I'll learn 'em!
Don't say learn 'em, Toad,
said Rat, greatly shocked.
It's not good English.
What are you always nagging at Toad for?
Inquired Badger, rather peevishly.
What's the matter with her English? It's the same what I use myself. And if it's good enough for me, it ought to be good enough for you.
I'm very sorry,
said Rat humbly.
Only I think it ought to be teach 'em. Not learn 'em.
But we don't want to teach 'em,
replied Badger.
We want to learn 'em, learn 'em, learn 'em. And what's more, we're going to do it too.
Oh, very well, have it your own way,
said Rat. She was getting rather muddled about it herself, and presently she retired into a corner where she could be heard muttering,
Learn 'em, teach 'em, learn 'em,
till Badger told her rather sharply to leave off. Presently, Mole came tumbling into the room, evidently very pleased with herself.
I've been having such fun,
she began at once.
I've been getting a rise out of the stoats.
I hope you've been very careful, Mole,
said Rat anxiously.
I should hope so too,
said Mole confidently.
I got the idea from Clever Toad and her numerous disguises. You see, when I went into the kitchen to see about Toad's breakfast being kept hot for her, Rat's washerwoman happened to be there on her rounds, and in mid-conversation with the maid, I asked her if, for the sake of a very noble and just cause, she might lend me her bonnet and shawl. It is up to us women, I said to her, to fight for our rights and stand up for one another. Well, the washerwoman looked at me like I was mad as hops, but she was very obliging, and so I put on her things. And then the maid, who had evidently been moved by what I said, went so far as to pin a flower to my shawl and whisper a prayer for me. And off I went to Toad Hall, as bold as you please. The sentries were on the lookout, of course, with their guns and their "Who comes there?" and all the rest of their nonsense. "Good morning, gentlemen," says I, very respectful. "Want any washing done today?" They looked at me very proud and stiff and haughty and said, "Go away, washerwoman. We don't do any washing on duty." "Or any other time," says I. Wasn't I funny, Toad?
Poor frivolous animal,
said Toad very loftily.
Wouldn't catch me dressed as a washerwoman.
The fact is, she felt exceedingly jealous of Mole for what she had just done. It was exactly what she would have liked to have done herself, if only she had thought of it first and hadn't gone and overslept herself.
Well, some of the stoats turned quite pink,
continued Mole.
And the sergeant in charge, he said to me, very short, he said, "Now run away, my good woman, run away. Don't keep my men idling and talking on their posts." "Run away," says I. "It won't be me that'll be running away in a very short time from now."
"Oh, Moley, how could you?"
said Rat, dismayed. Badger laid down her paper.
"I could see them pricking up their ears and looking at each other,"
went on Mole.
"And the sergeant said to them, 'Never mind her. She doesn't know what she's talking about.'" "Oh, don't I?" said I. "Well, let me tell you this. My daughter, she washes for Mistress Badger, and that'll show you whether I know what I'm talking about. And you'll know pretty soon, too. 100 bloodthirsty badgers, armed with rifles, are going to attack Toad Hall this very night by way of the paddock. 6 boatloads of rats with pistols and cutlasses will come up the river and effect a landing in the garden, while a picked body of toads, known as the diehards, or the death or glory toads, will storm the orchard and carry everything before them, yelling for vengeance. There won't be much left of you to wash by the time they've done with you. Unless you clear out while you have the chance." Then I ran away, and when I was out of sight, I hid, and presently I came creeping back along the ditch and took a peep at them through the hedge. They were all nervous and flustered as could be, running all ways at once and falling over each other, and everyone giving orders to everybody else and not listening. And the sergeant kept sending off parties of stoats to distant parts of the grounds, and then sending other parties to fetch them back again. And I heard them saying to each other, "That's just like the weasels. They're to stop comfortably in the banqueting hall and have feasting and toasts and songs and all sorts of fun, while we must stay on guard in the cold and the dark and in the end be cut to pieces by bloodthirsty badgers."
"Oh, you silly mug, Mole," cried Toad. "You've been and spoilt everything."
"Mole,"
said Badger in her dry, quiet way,
"I perceive you have more sense in your little finger than some other animals have in the whole of their fat bodies. You've managed excellently, and I begin to have great hopes of you. Good Mole. Clever Mole."
Toad was simply wild with jealousy, more especially as she couldn't make out for the life of her what Mole had done that was so particularly clever. But fortunately for her, before she could show temper or expose herself to Badger's sarcasm, the bell rang for luncheon. It was a simple but sustaining meal, bacon and broad beans and a macaroni pudding. And when they had quite done, Badger settled herself into an armchair and said,
"Well, we've got our work cut out for us tonight, and it will probably be pretty late before we're quite through with it. So I'm just going to take 40 winks while I can.
And she drew a handkerchief over her face and was soon snoring. The anxious and laborious rat at once resumed her preparations and started running between her four little heaps, muttering,
"Here's a belt for rat, here's a belt for mole, here's a belt for toad, here's a belt for badger,"
and so on, with every fresh accoutrement she produced, to which there seemed really no end. So Mole drew her arm through Toad's, led her out into the open air, pushed her into a wicker chair, and made her tell her all her adventures from beginning to end, which Toad was only too willing to do. Mole was a good listener, and Toad, with no one to check her statements or to criticise in an unfriendly spirit, rather let herself go. Indeed, much that she related belonged more properly to the category of what might have happened had I only thought of it in time instead of 10 minutes afterwards. Those are always the best and the spiciest adventures, and why should they not be truly ours, as much as the somewhat inadequate things that really come off?